Graham Downs, musicologist, senior lecturer in music at the University of Otago, and of course a musician himself, is in the Dunedin studio. Hello, Graham.
Good morning.
We are talking about the sisters, Kate and Anne McGarrigle. I got confused with Kate because, of course, she's the mother of Rufus Wainwright and Martha Wainwright and was married to Loudon Wainwright. So I just sort of got a bit disoriented for a second. But the sisters themselves, really well-noted singer-songwriters.
Yes, indeed. I just kind of took an excuse of having some time on my hands to revisit a record that I hadn't listened to for a long time. So the album is Dancer with Bruised Knees, which is also the title track which starts the record off. It's rather odd in many ways. It starts with a rather uncanny tactic of having a spoken baritone attest to the veracity of the story of the tale of the dancer in question that never failed to get a curtain call. And then as the song continues on, it unfolds in the first person of the supposed dancer, and it's either a Shaggy Dog story or an allegory or both. Having crashed rather than being caught on the fly by her dancing partner, the narrator reports she's become a weaver instead, doing wool hangings that all feature a dancer with bruised knees, as if such a symbol were universal enough to be saleable. But then we get to thinking that in many respects maybe we're all dancers with bruised knees. So here's the opening track.
When I first knew her, she was a dancer. I saw her leap confidently, knowing should she fall, it would be into the arms of her very own partner. Never failed to get a curtain call.
Crashing down, now I'm
delightful, clear voices they have, don't they? I don't know if you have a view on siblings and harmonising, do you?
Yeah, well, there's a family, there's like Beach Boys or our own Finn Brothers. I mean, there's a tendency because of the familial similarity of the grain that they match together quite well. It's pretty luscious, isn't it?
This was around 77, I think it came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's their second album. And they were just sort of beginning to take off and got signed to Warner Brothers. And, Warner Brothers wanted to tidy up their live act and get them dressed up differently, and they just said, nope, we do it this way, and that's the way we're going to continue to do it, which is pretty cool, actually, that they stuck hard to their mission. The second song I chose was First Born. So as a firstborn son with an older and younger sister, I can attest to that this lyric is a very good, if brutal, piece of observation, or to say at least I think my sisters would corroborate that it's a good piece of writing. While I was prepping this, a student came to see me for advice on how to keep developing her songwriting independent of the university. And the conversation went something like, right, well, you probably didn't know Kate and Anna Garrigle existed until you walked into my office just now. The student didn't. So I played the opening. The student liked it. Next, I said, don't be a lazy punter and just enjoy it. Google the chord progressions, which I did. And I'm starting to strum along to YouTube. Okay. Why B-flat 7 to E-flat? The student asked. Well, because once the song starts in earnest after its wistful introduction, it's essentially a list of attributes and facts. And the 5-1 chord progression, as it's called, in any key, maps onto the facticity of things and has done for centuries. Then it turns to the minor. Student asks, why? Well, another pair of 5-1 progressions, G7 to C minor. And the progression has a rocking motion on account of its repeat, and sometimes the second G7 chord is inverted with a B in the bass to make a rising sequence. The chord progression swells, and everything seems to map onto the matriarchal ardour and swooning of the mother and the grandmother that's in the lyrics. Mother's favourite, grandmother's too. Then the music has another 5-1 progression from E-flat 7 to A-flat, which is the beautiful chord for the beautiful boy, and then a 5-1 chord, B-flat back to E-flat to come back to the home chord of the key. And as I'm strumming along, the student, who was a good student, says, that's a 5-7 sus4 chord. Why? I says, well, because it makes the progression sweeter and softer. It even beautifies it. But the text is rather brutal, not beautiful. The fact that the son will break the hearts of his mother and grandmother, and then, turning to the sisterhood that is the audience, adding, and he'll break yours too. Harsh reality, beautiful chords equals irony. And what's composed in terms of irony then comes fans out into the entire production. Of course, their wonderfully sweet singing and the production around it, it just drips irony from beginning to end, and it's rather wonderful. And a sense too that, firstborn sons, yeah, well, the last lyric, yes, he's that firstborn son, he's that son of a gun, just hates to walk, just loves to run. He loves to run as fast as he can with life held tight in the palm of his hand. Ain't no changing them. Brilliant. It's a great song.
The silver spoons in the mouth, baby clothes are baby blue, nothing's ever. Doubts cast up with the
is Kate and Anna McGarrigle. How did they build that musically? It almost ended up in a march at one point, and it sort of wells up euphorically. How did they do that?
It gathers momentum, doesn't it? I just think it's the increasingly fuller arrangement as the song progresses, but it kind of almost becomes, you know, like the character being described, unstoppable. wonderful song.
Yeah.
The third one I chose is a folk song, Perrine et ta servante, excuse my French, it's not been a long time since high school. So they sing a number of songs, they even did a whole album in French, they're bilingual. And this is a bizarre tale of a lover visiting a servant girl to profess his love, and indeed express it, shall we say. The local priest shows up and the lover is hidden in a crib. The servant forgets about him for 6 weeks, by which time the rats have eaten his skull and all of his toes. The skull is then used as a receptacle for holy water, and his leg bones turned into candlestick holders. Moral of the story? Probably sexual relations outside of the sanctity and commitment of marriage ends badly. Decapitation is often a symbol of emasculation, if I remember rightly, having read quite a lot of Eric Neumann's work over the last few years, psychologist, pupil of Carl Jung. Anyway, it's a very good example of the sisters' cultural immersion in the old as well as the new, and their bilingual tendencies.
Servante, Perrine ta servante, chez Monsieur le Curé du Grand Arondaine, chez Monsieur le Curé du Grand Arondaine. Son âme avait la voir, son âme avait la voir, le soir après dîner du Grand Arondaine, le soir après dîner du Grand Arondaine. Perrine, ma Perrine, voudrais-tu m'embrasser? Oh, grande goutte bête, oh, grande goutte bête, ça se prend sans se demander du grand arondaine, ça se prend sans se demander du grand arondaine. Où vas-tu bien caché du grand arondaine? Cache-toi donc dans la huche, cache-toi donc dans la huche. Il saura point trouver du grand arondaine, il saura point trouver du grand arondaine. Elle avait oublié du grand arondaine. Au bout de 6 semaines, au bout de 6 semaines, l'air l'avait mangé. Ils ont rongé son crâne, ils ont rongé son crâne. Et puis tous les doigts pieds du grand arondaine. Et puis tous les doigts pieds du grand arondaine. Histoire de jeune homme marié qui allait trouver les filles, qui allait trouver les filles le soir après dîner du grand arondaine, le soir après dîner du grand arondaine.
I'm waiting for you to pronounce it again.
Perrine et ta servante. Not very good with French. It's been a long time since high school.
Yeah. It's quite orchestral almost, isn't it? I mean, they're incredibly versatile, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And they play all those instruments too, you know. And they're very, you know, very skilled musicians and arrangers, and, you know, the counter harmonies that they generate through the song is, you know, quite wonderful. And I think that sometimes there's three voices sung, and one of them might have sung a second time in a few spots. So it's incredibly detailed and just extraordinarily wonderful.
All right.
And so finally, we finish with a bit of Beethoven, because we're on the cusp of 2020 and it's the 250th anniversary of Beethoven's birth. And this is a very short movement, which Adorno would say characterises as Beethoven as the ogre. The movement that precedes it, this is the second movement, has extraordinary eloquence over 13 minutes. This very short movement is a parodistic scherzo, and that its very brevity and the squareness of its structure mocks the eloquence that's preceded it. So, and his preparedness to do this, I think Beethoven ranks with Shakespeare. That's probably why we're celebrating his 250th anniversary of his birth next year, because he's up there. So have a great holiday season and get out and hear some Beethoven next year, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of it on offer.
Wonderful. Thank you, Graham. You too. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
There you have it. How delightful, and all in 1 minute and 55 seconds by the looks of it. That's Beethoven, Opus 130, String Quartet in B-flat, Movement 2 Presto. That's the Lindsay String Quartet performing.